These are the Target Files, taking a 21st century look back at the 20th century adventures of the Doctor in novelization and audiobook form, looking through the eyes of adulthood at our childhood memories. After all, a great Time Lord once said, there's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish some of the time.
But we can't be nowhere. That's impossible.
Zoe, the Doctor's astrophysicist companion, can't understand how the TARDIS can be beyond both time and space. But the Doctor's time-travelling craft has taken him, Zoe, and Jamie to a place where fiction is reality. Beguiled and threatened on all sides by characters from myth and literature, the Doctor must discover who or what controls the all-too-lifelike apparitions.
Hello, welcome to episode 52 of Doctor Who Target Files. This is Mike in Swansea.
And hello, it's Alex in Exeter.
This time we are discussing the second Doctor story and novelisation, The Mind Robber, written by Peter Ling, and the 2008 release as an audiobook, performed by Sir Derek Jacobi. Alex, your sort of initial thoughts on The Mind Robber?
It starts off with, you know, quite a big thing happening and TARDIS falling apart, and it sort of turns into a very tight, theatrical, dramatical piece, I'd call it, basically, only with, you know, like three major characters. There's a lot of other things around the main characters, but it feels quite tight. I did actually enjoy it more than I thought it was going to.
Interesting you use the word theatrical, mate, because that's the word I've been struggling to think of, really, to describe it all. It's got a very much sometimes a pantomime feel, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. The way, you know, they bring in sort of all the sort of stuff from sort of literature and sort of, you know, different themes, but it still feels a bit not completely real. It sort of feels like a pantomime image of, you know, people from literature and that. I think it's quite fun.
Yeah, and that is what you just pointed out is part of the story itself, isn't it? It is set in a land of fiction.
Yeah, it's set in a sort of white sort of land of fiction, which is controlled by, I suppose you'd call it, it's just called the Master, so I kept thinking of the other Master, but it's not that Master. It sort of falls into different bits of fiction. You know, you get like Alice in Wonderland, and you get, you know, the sort of Minotaur, and all sorts of different bits of fiction. It's sort of being controlled by the fiction landscape, really.
Yes, it got me thinking about other forms of literature where you have crossovers of characters. I suppose we get it a lot in the comic book genre nowadays, and onto such things as the Marvel films, and more sort of classic literature. I was thinking of a series recently like Penny Dreadful, which had a lot of sort of horror characters working together against other dark forces, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You get the sort of multi-crossover things are a major thing these days in sort of film and TV. And you got it a bit in literature in the back day, but you get it more in TV and film, I'd say.
Yes, and there's the whole idea of, you know, the Doctor himself later on in the book and Jamie and Zoe becoming fictional characters. That put me in mind of the little conversation that the Doctor has with Robin Hood in the Capaldi episode, Robot of Sherwood, towards the end of that story. Do you remember that one, Al?
Oh, yeah, definitely, about the whole, you know, are you real or what's real? I remember, no, it's what you mean.
Yeah, I think Robin Hood's line, played by Tom Riley, is, we're all stories after all, Doctor.
Yeah, this sort of great looks at him back, you know, looks back and goes, am I?
Absolutely, yeah, the way Peter played it was superb. Very interestingly, in this novel, we have the first chapter seen as more of a flashback, and the pacing sort of slows down in the novelisation later on, but that first couple of chapters, I think the first two, represent the first episode of 5 in the TV version, where we see the TARDIS initially disintegrate. But before that moment, we have the hallucination of Jamie and Zoe seeing their home planets on the screen. How do you feel that came across?
I think all those sort of bits came across really well in the book. I haven't actually seen the TV episodes yet, but I expect it comes over quite well. But you just marvel at the amount of stuff they probably had to do on screen. How well does it sort of over?
I think it does really well on TV, to be honest. It's a pretty decent pace, pretty well directed, to be honest. We know there aren't a lot of Patrick Troughton stories available to rewatch, unfortunately, because of missing episodes and horrifically destroyed back in the 70s, we think, unless they're found again. We're not really sure what we're comparing it against, but it is an enjoyable sort of romp to watch as a TV version. And I just wanted to speak a little bit, we'll dip in and out again, Al, of the audiobook performed by Sir Derek Jacobi. The sound design, sorry, what I found a bit strange was this techno track we get when Zoe looks upon the image or the hallucination of her home planet on the TV screen. I almost wanted to put, you know, the pink whistle on and start dancing with the Dayglow clothes like it was the early 90s, you know, in the car listening to that one. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, it was a bit, I admit, the sound effects are very good on the audio, but I think there are some bits where it goes a bit over the top, and definitely that first bit when Zoe sees her sort of planet again, it's very sort of 90s techno. I did agree on that. It's like, where was this coming from? It's sort of, including this is like, you know, I suppose it might have been elements of it in the 60s, but I think the soundscape is a good soundscape, but it's a bit, again, over the top at some point.
Yes, another novelisation that came a long time after the TV version, 1968 shown on television, and 1986 first novelised in hardback by Peter Ling from his initial TV script, and then 2008 was this audiobook version, so we've gone through the sort of techno-trance era since then, haven't we? And they've obviously had a bit of a younger sound designer on this release.
Oh, definitely. It's sort of over the eras, though, because I think it's a very good audiobook, and it has a lot going with it, because Derek Jacobi's performance is excellent. And I think the bits at the beginning, those first two chapters, are beautifully described, that whole sort of separation of the Doctor in the forest, sitting in the chair and trying, you know, it just works really well, I think.
Yes, I was really impressed with Ling's writing and Sir Derek's performance of the whole issue of doing what it says in the tin, you know, the mind robber. You get the idea of Troughton's Doctor sitting in the chair, and you really get the thought process of him trying to battle against things in his mind, like he's calling out the times tables, isn't he, to try and focus on his mind being taken over.
Oh, definitely. It's like, you know, any nonsense to stop, you know, the mind robber from getting into his head, really.
Yes, and then we sort of reach this mythical land of fiction, and a lot of these famous literary characters start appearing, Al. Did any of them really stand out for you across the mediums of this story?
I quite enjoyed, I thought Gulliver was quite fun from Gulliver's Travels. And then you get all the bits of Alice in Wonderland, which are quite amusing. And, well, so you've got the Minotaur, haven't you? The bit from the Minotaur, from the Odyssey of the Minotaur. I think they do stand out well, and the whole bit with Jamie's dream coming through with the unicorn is quite fun. I think they do work really well in the book, I think.
Yeah, they stretched out a few elements in the book, you know, which weren't in the TV version, but I think such as the Jamie having the dream, as you said, about the unicorn, and the Doctor and everybody interacting, but character-wise, did you feel this is more of a Jamie and Zoe story than Troughton, who has a pretty pivotal role to play in ending the situation?
I think for most of it, it's more Jamie and Zoe's story, but I think Jamie has more time than Zoe, I'd say, and then by the end of the end of the story, you've got the Doctor sorting all the problems out, basically, and that sort of works very well. Well, I was just thinking then, do you think this is where they got the title for the most recent episode, you know, The Unicorn and the Wasp?
The Unicorn and the Wasp, possibly, the one from about 10 years ago.
Yeah, the one about Agatha Christie, I was thinking because of the unicorn and the...
I did wonder, Al, as well, because one of the... because of the fantastical literary elements to this story, one of the chapter titles is actually Once Upon a Time. And we have Twice Upon a Time coming up in just over a month for the Christmas special. I wonder, will we see a return to the land of fiction? Is that how Mr. Hartnell's Doctor, played by David Bradley, and Capaldi's meet, I wonder?
That would be rather good if that was how it's going to be, because that would be fun. Of course, we know... Have they actually launched any pitches, what you were telling me about last night?
Oh, no, but should we discuss that in the news section a bit later on, Al?
We'll discuss that in the news.
Potential spoilers there. A Twitter account came up suggesting there might have been some filming going on in the UK here as we record this on November the 6th. Last night in Cardiff, November the 5th. A Twitter account that was quickly then deleted, apparently, so it's all got a bit of mystery to it. But we'll discuss it later on, I think, Al.
Anyway, do you think it is more Jamie and Zoe? Because I think it's more Jamie because she has a lot of stuff going on. Then you get sort of quite a good bit with Zoe, and then it all goes back to the Doctor by the end, doesn't it?
Yeah, Al, a famous bit of thinking on your feet in this story, because Fraser Hines, during filming, had a weekend off, and he had his nephew staying down, and he actually managed to contract chickenpox from them. And he was replaced by actor Hamish Wilson, and that led to the creation in the story of the Doctor having to put his face back together in a game, and the actor Hamish Wilson taking over from Fraser Hines for an episode or two.
Yeah, I think that's I thought that was the reason, because I've heard that story as well from Fraser, and I thought that's a really good way of doing that in the book, where, you know, the Doctor has put his face back and he doesn't do it quite right.
And he's very sort of nervous with Zoe, isn't he? Zoe asks why Jamie's face is different, and he sort of says, no, I did it properly, you know, it wasn't my fault. He's very sort of sheepish about it.
Yeah, and it sort of, you know, it takes Zoe later in the story to get it exactly right.
Absolutely, and then Fraser came back, but I know you said you hadn't seen the TV version, but Hamish Wilson does do a very good job, Al, in that in the TV episodes.
Yeah, I expect he does, because I think we saw him in something recently, Hamish Wilson, didn't we? But no, sort of spin-off Doctor Who thing he was in, what we saw at Regen a few years back.
I think so, yes, it was. Was it a Power of the Daleks remake?
Yeah, it was something like that, wasn't it? And he was sort of playing the Doctor, and he was quite good in that.
He was fantastic, wasn't he? Yes, and other characters-wise, just want to talk about Zoe again. There's a great sort of martial arts scene within the book and the television version. A real sort of kick-ass character, isn't she?
Well, yeah, she is through most of it. I think there are some bits where she does turn into the normal, you know, old Doctor companion. I think most of the time she is really, you know, confident. But I think there are bits where she goes back to sort of traditional form.
Yes, and I don't know if that should be the only mention of Ass and Zoe we mentioned in this story. Famously, Wendy clinging to the console while it's spinning around in outer space in a certain silver suit, Al.
Oh, yes. Wendy Powers, it does tell that story quite a bit. It's hilarious.
Yes, Wendy herself, folks, but we won't delve into that, shall we say.
If you ever go to a convention and meet her, she'll probably hear that story, and it's much better from her.
Yeah, rather than some sort of... strange person bringing it up. Yes, Al, on to the main sort of villain, the Master of Fiction. Too much of a spoiler to say he is a puppet of things, as we find out he is a sort of human writer who's been placed in this situation and wants the Doctor to take over from him.
Put there by this sort of alien brain. We don't actually know who it is, really, but there's that sort of great bit near the end where he sort of unravels and becomes the old writer again. I thought it was quite sad at the end.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, he mentions one of the characters he wrote for in the fictionalised version of Earth, even, was a Captain Jack Harkaway. Now, that sounds very similar to something we've seen in modern Doctor Who, don't we, somebody?
Yeah, I was thinking that when he said that. I think that's very, very close to Mr. Torchwood.
Yeah, I think RTD might have been thinking of those things when he named these characters.
I think so. And I think he's a really interesting character because, you know, going back to the audiobook, you know, Jackery plays him very much like... the other master. He plays him very much like that for most of the audiobook. And I was thinking, is it that master, knowing it isn't that master? And it's all very well done, I think.
I quite agree with that, Al. Has he possibly, you know, great kudos to Sir Derek. We've met him a few times at Regeneration's convention in Swansea. Does he possibly go a little over the top at times?
I think he does sometimes with the Troughton impersonation, and I thought sometimes the master of fiction was turning into his master.
I did read one review of this when it was released back in 2008. I think it was on Audible or Amazon, and somebody had written the review back then saying that his Doctor was a little more like John Pertwee than Patrick Troughton, but I didn't seem to notice that myself, but I did think...
Not really. I thought it was quite close to Troughton. Maybe a little smidgen of William Hartnell sometimes, but mostly Troughton, I thought.
Yeah, possibly a little, maybe a little bit of the grumpiness, perhaps that's what they meant.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that sort of grumpiness, but there's still a sort of very caring Troughton there, I thought.
But I did have a bit of an issue with his Jamie voice because I thought the Scots accent was really all over the place.
Oh, yeah, it's not the greatest. I would agree on that. It sort of goes from different parts of Scotland all the time. Every time you hear Jamie, it's not, you know, Jamie keeps changing of Scotland, I thought.
But you can, I think you can ultimately tell for any criticism of his voices the fact that Sir Derek is a Doctor Who fan. You know, he said at Regenerations that was one of the things off his lists at the time when he'd appeared as the Master, and I think he wanted to do Coronation Street then, which he went on to do shortly after we first met him. I do get the impression he does really enjoy reading this audiobook.
Well, yeah, and concluding we're getting him back as the War Master, Big Finis in Christmas, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, you know, that superb appearance back in Utopia a decade ago and now coming back, and that should be an excellent listen.
Definitely on the list for December, I think. But I think it's a very interesting performance, you know, the Master of Fiction, because it starts off very, very malevolent and then sort of goes into being, you know, the person who's trapped there by the brain base. And I think that slowness and sort of, you know, depiction is a really good depiction of, you know, of villainy, really.
Yes, there's definitely elements in this sort of master brain of the later character, the Master we know and love nowadays.
Yeah, that's why I think it's, you know, until you know it's the Master of Fiction, my brain get thinking, is this an early version of the Master I've forgotten? Or then you get to know it's the Master of Fiction. So I think definitely in later years that they saw how good that sort of character could be.
Yes, how did you feel of the balance of darkness and the lighter moments in this book, Al? I was thinking, in terms of humour, the characters of Rapunzel and Carcass in particular bring a great deal of elements of humour.
Yeah, I think the humour is balanced very nice by sort of darker bits in this book. And I think they're sort of, you know, they're sort of cartoonish characters of Rapunzel, and the Carcass are very good fun. And I quite like the sort of pompousness of the Gulliver's, you know, of them and old Gulliver's character as well. And I think there's a lot of humour around the darkness will work very well, I think.
Yeah, talking about the climax of the story, Al, how did you feel it was written and came across in the audiobook? I'm going to say myself that I felt, because the direction is so good on TV and the performances of Troughton and the gentleman whose name escapes me playing the Master of Fiction, the climax in the book loses some of that tension you get because Patrick was such a good actor. You know, Derek Jacobi's doing his best to convey the words, but I just feel you lose something in the medium.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I haven't seen it, what I expect, knowing Patrick's performance, it is a lot better on TV, where it sort of happens very, very quickly, I thought, in the audio, but, you know, he works out that you have to untouch him from the brain, and it sort of all happens very, very quickly, where I expect it's much more sort of layered in the TV version, probably.
Yes, it's very hard for any reader to capture Patrick Troughton's sort of frantic acting. I think he was so superb at putting that panic into the Doctor.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello, this is Hughes News on the 6th of November. A few sad things we have to mention first this week. Dudley Simpson, who died at the age of 95 yesterday, was involved with different Doctor Who stories from the late 60s to the early 1970s, including one of the best Tom Baker episodes, City of Death. which was performed at the 50th anniversary Doctor Who prom. Also, unfortunately, died this week is Paddy Russell, one of the first female Doctor Who directors. She did great things for Tom Baker, such as Pyramids of Mars and Horror of Fang Rock. From BigFinish.com this week, it's been announced that there's going to be a new Gallifrey season, which is going to be called Gallifrey Time War. It connects to all the other Time War things that have come out recently, one with the Eighth Doctor, Paul McGann, and in December, the Time War Master box set was coming out. You will find out how Derek Jacobi's Master is involved with Gallifrey by listening to the War Master box set in December. Looks very good. Also from Big Finish for next year, we have the Doctor's daughter, Jenny, played by David Tennant's wife now, Georgia Tennant, and it's going to be 4 episodes as a box set in June next year. So, we have to discuss the covers for this rather good book. What covers do we have for it, Mike?
3 editions in print, Al. Hardback, 1986. Paperback, the following year, 1987. A David McAllister cover. One I thoroughly rate and really enjoy. No picture of the Doctor, but so much scope from everything else in the story. We have Doctor Who in sort of a yellowy background with a blue outline against a pink background. We have the TARDIS within a circle which looks like outer space, with a knight just to the right of it, a unicorn horse left underneath as if it's floating in the air. Wow. Cyrano de Bergerac, as he appears at the end of the story, standing in the sword pose, and a picture of Medusa in a nice greyish sort of stony colour.
That's very nice.
And then Peter Ling in black. A very, very good one, that, Al.
I do like that. That sounds very nice and effective.
And we did get, apparently, an Alistair Pearson one again just a few years later.
Oh, yeah.
Not quite as memorable for me, though. You know, the McCoy logo, slightly darkened. And they have, I think, for the best decision, gone for the Peter Ling version on the audiobook release from 2008. So a very recommended David McAllister one there.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really nice sort of depiction of all the sort of main things on the story, I think. I definitely like the look of that.
So, Al, you didn't see the TV version, but a score, please, overall for the novelisation and the audiobook.
No problem. Well, the book is very interesting. It has a lot of good pace, and you get these really sort of interesting character from fiction, you know, that whole Alice in Wonderland, and all the way that the, you know, the Doctor's sort of subtly being controlled by this mind robber is really good. So I'd probably give the book maybe a 7. I like the audiobook. The audiobook was really well read by Sir Derek Jacobi, but it does have those sort of things we were discussing, that sort of a very weird Jamie impression what changes every time. So I probably, that was very well read, and I like the soundscape. It's a bit intrusive in some bits, but I think it works. So I'd probably give that a 7 overall, I think.
6.5 for the television version for me. This is one where I think it's been well expanded in the novelisation. The TV version has elements which are done better than the novelisation and audiobook, as I've discussed. The end battle of wills and wits between the Doctor and the Master of Fiction takes quite a lot away from Troughton's great acting in those scenes. You know, just it being turned into purely novelisation audiobook form. But Derek Jacobi thoroughly enjoys the performance, adds a lot of depth to the characters. Some strange sort of soundscapes in there, but I'm going to go up to 7.5 for the audiobook and the novel, and 6.5 for the TV version.
Well, that's good, because I think that covers bases, basically, because the, you know, the audiobook is good, I think.
Yes, Al, absolutely. So, Doctor Who news. Are we going to discuss the issue we just did off-air about a certain Nicholas Pegg being removed from the roster, shall we say, or sacked from Doctor Who magazine for an abusive message, as they said, written within the first letter of sentences in the Watcher column in the most recent edition.
I'm just amazed that got all the way to print and nobody noticed that there was a cryptic, very nasty message. But in a way, I can sort of see where he's coming from, because That I think it's still a very good magazine. The sort of little, there's been some little tweaks I've not been that happy with. The fact that things seem to get split up more. It doesn't seem to be sort of, you get these really good interviews, and instead of having a full interview, every week, you seem to get bits from it, so it sort of collides into more than one issue, I think. I don't know if that works or not.
Well, I only buy the magazine now when a series is underway. And I've bought the first one that had Jodie on the cover shortly after her announcement. But I bought it this month for the Matt Lucas interview. As you said, change, it may take a while for things to bed in. Try not to be too critical. Tom Spilsbury has gone now. He had a good long reign of 10 years when I thought the magazine was pretty excellent. So we'll just have to see. Unfortunate that Nicholas Pegg's had such a great history with Doctor Who, made so many contributions writing-wise with the magazine, online, and as performing as a Dalek himself, I hope it hasn't damaged everything for him, I hope he still has an input into this wonderful show.
Well, you'd hope so, because, he does lots of different things, he does lots of stuff for Big Finish, and he does the Daleks, and he has his sort of own interest in David Bowie, and I think he writes the sort of encyclopedia of David Bowie every other year, so he's got sort of a backstring of the Doctor Who thing does go up the creek. But I don't know if that's the right thing to do, because, even if you don't like your work, well, you don't really put that into print, do you? I don't know if that's me.
No, it depends on your level of frustration, I suppose, really, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, well, he's probably told everybody, there's a small office, that building, he's probably told everybody what he felt, so probably everybody knew his feelings. You don't have to put it in a cryptic message, including what it, we won't say what it spells out, because it's very rude, but let's just say I do not know how that got through the editorial.
Yes, anyway, the wonderful world of behind the scenes in TV magazine production. There we go, Al. But Doctor Who news, interesting potential spoiler dropped on Gallifrey Base last night, suggesting there was some nighttime filming going on somewhere in the Cardiff Docklands between the IKEA store and the Steelworks in the Bay Area, suggesting the TARDIS had landed in water, and this may be the plight of Jodie's Doctor just after she's been born from the regeneration of Peter Capaldi this Christmas, that the TARDIS might crash land into a body of water somewhere. But it was a tweet that was swiftly deleted, and the account was deleted, so it could be a load of nonsense. But interesting if true, Al. We've had the crash landing before into Amy Pond's garden for the 11th Doctor. Do you feel it's a bit of an overused trope now, though, having to have the TARDIS crashing after the Doctor has regenerated?
I think, yeah, to be honest, I think it has been done before with Matt Smith, but it's the same reason. It's a very clever way of persuading the BBC to build a new TARDIS, everything in the 4K, really. So I agree, it has been done before, and that's why they did it with Matt Smith, to put everything into TARDIS and that into HD quality, and that's probably why they're doing it again, so they can upgrade the 4K, basically. But I, like you, think it can be overused, that trick, and it'd be, dread to think, whatever. I just hope Jodie's Doctor is doing all these night shoots, has a nice coat again.
Yes, and also been announced, we are indeed on Christmas, from the Christmas special on Children in Need Telethon in the UK, a week on Friday the 17th, I think, we are going to get a 2-minute clip from Twice Upon a Time, the upcoming Christmas special.
Oh, good, that's normally the only bit of Children in Need I normally watch, so I will look out for that.
Same year, down the years, we had the wonderful time crash a decade ago now, we've had various clips, haven't we? The late, great Terry Wogan, presenter in the UK, famously pulling a long check out of the TARDIS with various actors from the series back in 85, one of the first telethons.
Is it really that long ago, that one?
Yeah, it's available on some of the DVDs.
It is on the YouTube, is it? I know, you've got the great, with Rowan Atkinson as the Doctor, that was a great... that was a comic relief, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was The Curse of the Fatal Death. I rewatched that again recently.
It's not bad, is it? I rewatched it again recently. It's not actually that bad.
But I think in terms of that period of Doctor Who, it really has taken the mick out of the old series. That's the only thing I find wrong with it. It definitely is in that wilderness period when the series was seen still as a bit of a joke by the BBC. It is very funny in its own way and did attract some brilliant performers.
Oh, that is true.
Yeah, so not a huge amount of other Doctor Who news, Al, but Big Finish-wise, are you looking forward to hearing Derek Jacobi as the War Master and to Jenny returning, the Doctor's daughter?
Oh, definitely, definitely. They all look really good, and there's a trailer up from the War Master, which sounds very sinister.
The War Master, it does indeed sound that way, Al. And before we sort of finish off, are we going to bring our new aspect into the show of suggesting something for our listeners, viewers to listen to that isn't Doctor Who related?
What have you been watching what isn't Doctor Who related?
Well, I downloaded the other day a brand new audiobook released 2 or 3 days ago, Twin Peaks, The Final Dossier. It's all about one of the characters in the most recent series, an FBI agent, who is trying to clean up the whole mystery of Twin Peaks going back and the new layers we've had added to the story in this new season 3 that finished earlier this year. And as with most things, Twin Peaks, it leaves you with more questions than answers, but lot of thought has gone into certain characters that we did see in series 3 and certain characters that we didn't. So I would enjoy that. I would recommend that as an audiobook download, Al. TV-wise, I've gone back and started to rewatch the League of Gentlemen series from the 90s because we're getting new episodes this Christmas for its 20th anniversary. Very superb nice. Mark Gatiss, Steve Pemberton of Doctor Who fame, and of course Rhys Shearsmith, who was Patrick Troughton in An Adventure in Space and Time and appeared in Sleep No More in the Capaldi era.
Very good episodes. I didn't get into it to begin with. Everybody's been raving about it, so I was sort of slowly watching Stranger Things on Netflix.
I was going to say, I did finish season 2, Al. That was going to be one of mine as well. Are you on season 1 at the moment? Or
I've just started episode 2 of season 1, and it just gets better, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I thought out of the 9 episodes, a lot of people have made this...
How many episodes is it?
I think it's 8 in season 1 and 9 in season 2. Or it may be more.
I think you probably couldn't stretch the content more than that.
There is one episode which was a bit of a letdown in season 2, but it's strong. I won't spoil it, Al, but it's very strong in terms of season 2 really has widened elements of season 1, which we introduced.
Do you reckon I'll get to a season 3?
It's planned for 3 and 4, I do believe, and they have set up strands for that to be happening. So hopefully the next year or two we'll see those new seasons.
What else have we been watching? What's been watching Gunpowder, the BBC One drama all about the Gunpowder plot.
Kit Harington from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, you need a very strong... I recommend is that you need a very strong stomach for that. It is a very well-written and very good drama, but it's extremely violent.
They've gone for the Peaky Blinders Boardwalk Empire type of gore, have they?
Oh, I'd say even more violent than Peaky Blinders.
Wow. There
are bits of torture in... There's bits of scenes of torture you're thinking, how did this not get an 18 certificate?
Yes, indeed. And there's a short film I was recommended to on Gallifrey Base... featuring the new companion, Ryan, played by Tosin Cole. He plays just a gentleman who's going to a therapy session, and the therapist is Jessica Hines, who, of course, appeared in the David Tennant era. Now, it's on iPlayer, but if you just type in Tosin Cole short film Jessica Hines, you will find the name of it. But it's a good 15-minute short.
Look at that, definitely.
And it does show that Tosin has a lot of charisma, and you know, I'm just increasing in confidence now, seeing what him and Mandeep Gill and who's the other one? Not Brian Connolly, the one who looks like him, Bradley Walsh.
Bradley Walsh. I see gave up everything except the chase.
Yes, a bit of a good cash cow for him, that one, I think, the chase
quiz show
here in the UK, but we know he's got great acting chops.
He's fun. I'm just thinking, another thing I recommend audiobook-wise, I haven't started, it's called... P-H-E, and it's like a crime story where it puts Stan Laurel as the detective.
Wow, that sounds a very interesting concept, very bizarre, and probably one that would work.
Yeah, it's sort of set in the 1920s, and it's called He, and it's by, oh, God, I can't remember its spine. It's available on Audible. If you just put the word H-E in it, we'll find it. And it's by, John Connolly. Thank you, Brian.
Fantastic, Al. And, speaking of audiobooks again, our net is a very exciting one for me. It's the first Target novel.
Ooh, yes.
I certainly remember. It's a great story I remember seeing at the age of 6 in 1983 when I videotaped and watched over and over. Would you like to let the listeners know what it's going to be?
That is going to be the Five Doctors, read by the great John Coleshaw and Nick Bliggs doing all Daleks and the Cybermen, all the voices like that. Plus the book, is that Terence Dix, the book?
It is Terence Dix, yeah.
Yeah, book by Terence Dix, and of course the DVD as well I'm going to grab, so we have all three covered.
Yes, just one of my favourites. I am a lot, there's a bit of a divide in fandom sometimes, you know, a lot of people think multi-Doctor stories, certainly in the classic era, are a bit of a pantomime, but, really, you know, definitely not with Day of the Doctor.
Oh, I love the Day of the Doctor. I think it really worked, the Day of the Doctor, and I think the five Doctors works really well, as well from what I remember.
On a former podcast, we did the Two Doctors, and that was a great Target novel, wasn't it, Al? And a great story.
Really good. I can't remember reading the Target novel, the Five Doctors. I think it's just as good, I think.
And that wonderful cover, but we'll discuss all this next time, folks, won't we?
We'll discuss all this next time.
Thank you, Al. Thank you, faithful listeners.
Thank you all.
Next time, Doctor Who Target Files, we'll be discussing The Five Doctors, written by Terence Dix, along with the audiobook, performed by John Coleshaw. Contact Doctor Who Target Files on Twitter at DW Target Files handle, or search Facebook for the Doctor Who Target Files podcast and leave us a message. Thanks for listening. Doctor Who Target Files, the Mind Robber Review, featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. The Mind Robber incidental music, composed originally by Anton Bruckner. I Am the Doctor, composed originally by Murray Gold. Version for the podcast by Vale Mystery. Please do check out their YouTube channel, VAYLE Mystery. Newsround opening and closing themes, composed by Ted Heath and his orchestra, and by John Baker. Doctor Who Target Files, The Mind Robber Review, was recorded in Swansea, Wales, UK, and Exeter, Devon, England, UK, during November 2017.